Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It did feel like a debut book. If I was to recommend it to somebody, I would go like, hey, plot's fast paced and will entertain you. The dialogue can feel unnatural and just more on the amateurish side. If I hear another thing described with lightning or thunder, I'm going to lose it. If I hear the word lightning again, so help me God.
Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tutor Round Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about our review of the book Murder at Spindle Manor by Morgan Stan. Right off the bat, this is an SFFPO.
SPFBO.
Damn it, you get it wrong every time.
You alphabet soup motherfucker. You get it right once. He said before the episode, I got this. I don't worry. What's the author's name is what? J.R. Tolkien. No, it's Morgan Stan.
Darn.
SPFBO.
SPFBO.
Watch me have it wrong. Let me make sure. Yeah.
This is our fourth.
Yes.
Fourth book that we're reviewing for SPFBO. Our whole contest and ranking the best of the best winners. So
what is that competition? What is that?
That is a indie author competition. So for self-published books, it is hosted by Mark Lawrence, fantastic author, love his stuff. And we were asked to be one of the panelists for judging the finalist books.
The Contest of Champions, yeah. It's all the winners from the past 10 years in this fantasy self-published blog off. That's the name of it. We are judging and ranking them. And so far, our ranking is Sword of Kaigan, number one. By Blood by Salt, number two. Orconomics, number three.
Yep.
And this is going to be a spoiler-free review on Murder at the Spindle Manor. For the next 10 minutes, will be completely spoiler-free, and then we'll give our spoiler warning per usual. And so what do you know about this book going in? It's an SPFBO book. This was our fourth one. How would you pitch this to people of what the book is?
Ultimately, it is a murder house mystery fantasy setting. It's a fantasy murder house story.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's basically it, as much as you want to get into it. It's overall, yeah, I mean, that is actually what I had going into the book as well.
I was
thinking, like, what was my expectations going in by the title, Murder at Spindle Manor, and then just the brief understanding.
There's murder.
It's murder.
Yeah.
At a house, in a fantasy setting. All right. That was my interpretation going in. So those were my expectations. Overall, to give my overall spoiler-free thoughts, I didn't dislike it completely, but I do think it is flawed. It's currently ranked number four in the books that the books we've rated. So overall, I give it a 2.5.
2.5 star. That's your Ramble rating.
Yep.
Disappointed.
Gotcha. Yeah. Overall, I have other things that are more flawed, but I would say I'm disappointed. There's some things that I think were better than others, but overall as a package, I didn't dislike my time.
Cool. Yeah. So you put it right though. This murder mystery, the premise of the book, I'll try to get her name right. It's a huntress. Her name is Isabel Agarwal. She is tracking and cornering a beast which is called the Doppelverm. It's this beast that it kills its victim and mimics it entirely. So it'll mimic it. It could kill Rich and mimic all of his issues. So you could never tell it was anybody else. You'd be just as pretentious, just as bald, everything to the nitty gritty, except one thing, which you'll find out in the book, but it gets to mimic everything. And this huntress is trying to find out who the Doppelverm is. She has it cornered at the Spindle Manor. But while at the Spindle Manor, there's also a murder. So at the same time, while trying to solve the Doppelverm case, is also trying to solve a murder at the same time, and that's the premise. It's, I think it's what's considered gas lamp fantasy.
I've
heard the term.
I have not really heard the term. It makes sense for the setting, gas lamp fantasy being your imagine London, you know, London during the when gas lamps are still a thing, and the Great London Fog. And that's the aesthetic of the story.
Victorian,
yeah. London, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That is the vibe of the story. The world building, I think this is fair enough to bring up in spoiler-free section. The world is very interesting in the sense of the sky is actually not even visible, that the smog actually covers basically the entire continent. That's how thick thick the fog is. I don't know what the world building origin of that is. There's apparently a land that you can actually see the stars, so that's ooh. So definitely has that gas lamp spooky fog vibes.
Yes.
What did you give?
I'm gonna So what I gave the book, I enjoyed the book more than my rating is. I gave it a 1.75 stars. A very flawed. And I think this is, so of the SBFBOs, this is going to be number 4 for us.
Yep.
Right? So what we do is we add together Rich and I's score, and whatever that is, basically, we gave Orconomics, our total together was like a 7.75, I believe.
Right.
And then for, we can look back at the reviews, but basically we add both together and that gets an out of 10 score. Pretty much that. Okay. So I think very flawed. I had a lot of issues with the prose, the characterization, and the world. Just when we get into the details and the meat of the story, I'll go over those. But I didn't have a bad time reading it. It's like, I wouldn't say the book's bad. The plot moved quick and fast, and there was always mysteries thrown at you. It's a very easy read. There's a charm to it. The charm did not outweigh the flaws. As a book, as the quality book, judging it, I have to say very flawed. I kind of have a quick 2-second thoughts of each category that I tried to think about just to give quick thoughts on. World building wise, I say this in a good way too, but like a Jackson Pollock painting, like it just throws a bunch of stuff at you. You're like, oh, that's so that's how I describe the world going into it. The plot, super fast paced. I'd almost say this too, that Morgan Stanley, I'm sure this is a series too. I'm sure the series has lots to it for the people that like the charm, but I think the author might have thrown a lot of mysteries and stuff at you to like keep the reader's attention, and didn't have enough trust in the narrative to just be, to allow the story to ruminate, and almost had to keep hooking the reader so the reader wouldn't pull away. It did feel like a debut book. It did feel early on as if there was that that tension of going, oh, I don't want to lose my reader. I need to throw more plot stuff. And then characters, I think there was an attempt at depth with the main character that I would have rather just had none of it, because there was an attempt at depth there that made me go like, okay, that's more, it's not just archetypal, but you know the moment I'm talking about.
I completely agree with you.
I would have just preferred getting, you know, the stereotypical huntress and not tried to get something deeper there.
I would have preferred the noir approach.
Exactly. Like, give me the archetype.
The gritty detective that ultimately... There's not really an arc. There's not really a point. It's just their vibe and they're a vehicle for the story.
But yeah.
Ultimately, you're not supposed to. There's not really an arc or story with it or some deeper message behind their grittiness. It's just who they are.
It's who they are. That's what I expected, too.
Yes. And so the evolution of it definitely didn't land as well for me. I agree with you.
And then quick thing with the prose, if I hear another thing described with lightning or thunder, I'm going to lose it. If I hear the word lightning again, so help me God. I kept on having Vietnam flashbacks. Every time the lightning flashed, my PTSD... We'll talk about the pros when we get there. But then the thought-provokingness, yeah, there was... It also lacks some subtlety, too. But general thoughts are... I think the quality is lower, even though I didn't hate my time. I'm saying all these very flawed things about it, which is what our 1.75 means, but
yeah.
I was able to read it. I'm not, like, I didn't have a bad
biggest
time.
The biggest benefit to it is the plot moved along at such a pace that the flaws were not as, the flaws that we do have with it are not so apparent or don't overstay their welcome. It's not the flaws are not so persistent that I get annoyed. It's like, I see it, and then we're moving on. And so it doesn't stay long enough for me to be, you know, want to actually put it down.
Yeah, I will say we'll have a link in the description below for people who want to get it. It won the SPFBO. It averaged a 7.85 in 2023. That was the year that this won. So clearly a lot of people do love the book. So if you want to give it a shot, go check that out. I would say maybe the first turnoff for people, and I've seen this in some of the reviews as well, but it was the thing that glared out to me was the dialogue can feel unnatural and just more on the amateurish side. It definitely, I think, needed some work in that regard. It's just my brutal honesty. No hate toward the author.
Because you could actually look at the more positive view of the prose.
Yeah.
And it could be seen as more of a deliberate style of, you know, pulpy, you know, a pulp mystery novel with all of the tropes are taken to an 11. The archetypes are exaggerated. The dialogue, it is so on the nose. It is... Maybe it's not deliberately trying to be subtle at all. And so it's a choice, I guess. And if people really like that, that's fine.
But we'll get into our full details review. Anything else you want to say in spoiler free to let them know your, you said 2.5 disappointing. Did you want to talk up anything? I gave a lot of negativity. So anything you want to?
Talking up, I guess. I think I view the world building a little bit better than you do. I would agree it's a little bit like shotgun approach of it's like, oh, okay, that's here and that's here. It seems like a lot of things just thrown at it. However, I was still vaguely interested in the world. I thought the aesthetic is kind of cool. Some of the descriptions made it like this seemed like a fun world to have another story in. So I liked that there was some of the details, especially around a particular character. It's not the character that I found interesting. It's the world building element of it that I really liked. And we'll get into those details.
Okay.
So I was most positive about world building.
Then without further ado, spoiler warning.
Yep.
Spoilers here for Myrtle at Spindle Manor. This is our fourth.
Myrtle.
Murder. Murder on the beach. This is spoiler warnings for our fourth SPFBO book. All right. You ready?
Yep.
Emotional impact. Would you give that out of 5 stars?
I give this one a 2.5.
Same as your overall.
Yes.
I also give it a 2.5. Disappointing. Like I said, hey, my overall is lower. This is one of those emotionally, I had a good time, but then.
You didn't have a terrible time, but no, it's more of a, at the end of it, you're going, could be a little bit. Yeah, you're kind of wanting for more and some things to be different. So yeah, no, it's same as my overall for this one. And why do you think despite all of the other categories being much lower, why do you think the overall emotional drive of this book was better?
The punch of this book was more thriller, murder, mystery, hook you with the entertainment. It's going for entertainment, and we can when we discuss plot, we'll go down the list of how many different twists there were. But for a start, the purpose of it was to be engaging. And hey, are you curious about finding out who the murderer is? And the premise here is there's not just one murder. There's two murders. I didn't want to get into that in spoiler free, but there's two murders that happened. First, it's Mr. Prescott that's murdered, and then it is Abigail, right? I have the whole character list, so I will make sure I don't get these wrong. Angelica Keystone, who's murdered second. There's also the doppelverm. So there was three different curiosity threads going on. So I was reading page to page and actively hooked of going, okay, what's going to happen next? And hey, if I was just reading this as purely entertainment, that's why I'd give the book higher. It did hook me. It did engage me with those aspects. And so there's three mysteries going on, and in murder,
and there's also smaller ones of each character. What are they hiding? They're hiding something. Then there's
one's astral projecting, we find out. Yeah. Another one is
the large noble of like this mysterious kind of elf. It fills the role of kind of an elf-like creature, long-lived, powerful, tall, just top of the hierarchy, and now they're also there. And so what is their purpose? And so all those details are, it adds to the thrill of like, not only if the night ends and the murder isn't solved, not only does the murderer get away, but this, you know, other worldly type godlike creature is going to kill them all.
Adds to the tension.
Adds to the tension. So,
and their main character gets them out of that by lying and saying, oh, the Doppelvern was in the woods.
Yeah.
But in reality, the Doppelvern, we find out, was Blanchette, the person at Spindle Manor the whole time. Which, again, even the reveals, the endings, that they were somewhat satisfying too. I didn't hate the reveals of the Doppelvern being them and the murderer being Fields, and both the murders being connected. I'll get into issues, but in general, that stuff also grab you. And was that a highlight of the book, was more emotionally?
Or it's basically the intrigue of the plot kept me going.
Yeah.
And that's when I was most emotionally invested, is like, oh, what's going to happen next? I was curious.
Yeah.
Where I would fall off of, like, my emotional investment was lower, was like the relationship between Isabeau, I believe, pronounced right, Isabeau Agarwal and her
Evie.
And that whole budding partnership, it's supposed to be a draw. I did not particularly care for it. It just didn't work for me. A lot of the relationships between characters, I just was not invested in, and most especially Isabeau herself. And we can go deeper into that in thought-provoking nature, like the theme of, like, her character, and there's supposed to be more of a deeper message behind her. Did not find appealing. So I did not connect with these characters in any significant way.
That, yeah, I will have my complaints with characters, definitely. Ditto on that stuff. There was, I think, emotionally speaking, of what hit and what didn't, a lot of stuff that didn't hit for me, some of the humor didn't hit for me, some of the quirkiness didn't hit, and I love to get invested into that kind of charm. Maybe one example of that, I get it was just a quirky part of it, but chapter 13, kind of skipping over that chapter because, you know, we don't want to talk about chapter 13, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, cheeky, I get it. I get it. Maybe that's not even fair to mention, but more so that there was a couple things that gave me a little bit of the eye roll at times of, I don't know if it was going hard in the paint to be archetypal for archetypical reasons, but when it was presented that what the Doppelvern can do, and the Doppelvern can mimic everybody, it could do down to the T, your lust, your passions, everything, except not love. It can't mimic love. And then that kind of just moved on. I was more going like, why can't it? Or what's the juice there? What's the meat? It was just thrown out. So there was a couple of things in the plot that was there.
There is, like, you know, a creature longing to be human and ultimately being sufficiently unsatisfied. I get it.
I get it.
But
yeah, it's the presentation. It's the so a part of that with I guess more emotional issues when it came to the reveals. Everything's happening so quick. Sometimes the plot was moving so fast that the characters, when they'd be pinned in the corner, like finding out Evie's real identity or discovering about these characters, they would, like, give in so quick as well. They would kind of, as soon as Isabeau started to figure them out, they'd go, you got me. Damn it. You got me. And Isabeau, sometimes with the logic leaps, would put things together that are, I guess, are sound or are a theory, but not Occam's razor sometimes, of somehow Isabeau is putting together these lines of thought of, oh, this is the answer. Obviously, these murders are connected because of this and this and this. I'm going, well, I see how you got there, but it could be also 20 other things, right? So sometimes the logic leaps took me a little bit out of it. But in general, no, I did have more fun. The drawbacks are more so when it comes to the humor aspects of it, and we'll get into the characters, the plot, that other stuff that I did see as having more flaws is where that was brought out. Was there a significant moment for you that was the best moment that had you most edge of your seat? And then was there an opposite of that where you had the biggest eye roll?
The moment, I guess it would be a series of moments, like the moment I was most invested was the mystery around Penny and her oddity, which is a plot thing of, like, how different she was, like, from the very beginning of how she was multiple times said, like, she operates very differently than any other living doll ever. And the fact that Isabeau just, like, kind of ignores that, just kind of, we're going to move on from that. Like, thanks, Penny. But they're just like, not going to question that. Okay.
Move on.
Moving on. And it's vital, but I was invested in that mystery the most. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what is Penny trying to say?
Got
which
it.
Was important.
It was. It did come
it
full circle.
It was the most important part of the story. So I was invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
The least amount of investment I maybe had was honestly just every motivation for the characters.
Everyone.
Everyone's like little, like finding out their secret of why, what, you know, their motivation, like why they wanted to kill the Angelica Keystone or Angelica Keystone herself. Eh. I think there was the moment between Angelica Keystone and Isabeau when Isabeau is interviewing her and somehow Keystone gets under her skin and Isabeau ends the interview early. It was supposed to be this kind of whole dramatic scene and it just did not. I kind of rolled my eyes at it. Didn't land for me at all.
Gotcha.
It was a very serious, tense moment that was supposed to be that and I didn't see it.
Why didn't that work?
I think it's the weird depth of, like, you know, Keystone saying, like, oh, you're just as, you know, empty as me, and just trying to get under Isabeau's head, like, get under her skin, and I just didn't really believe it. Seemed, I don't know. Isabeau seems very cold, serious about her job. It seems weird that she would let Keystone get under her skin, and also, why would Keystone even try to do that? It seemed just weird.
It's something I noticed, and maybe this is a whole general critique emotionally. It's something I noticed. It seemed like the tense moments or the emotional pull that it's going for was playing more off of the genre than it was of the internal book.
Mm.
Something like that. I was trying to pinpoint why I felt that way too, because you've seen that in other stories and maybe it was more tense. But a scene like that, or a scene like there was the scene where, was it Teddy said, man, I just wish you were dead. And then Angelica dies, or Keystone dies. It that kind of stuff that you know is a part of the genre. Basically, this book is playing on the murder mystery genre a lot, things that you've seen and noticing and throwing a lot together, a big soup. And I think maybe that was part of it for me, was I was, a lot of the emotional moments are, oh yeah, that the genre does do this, or that's a subversion on the genre rather than this being a book on its own. I don't know. That's like a workaround thing of maybe why that didn't connect, of, oh, that's a scene that you know is powerful in other things, of like the cutting off, the tense, oh, stopping the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help explain? Maybe that's just my thought on it. Do you agree with that?
I think it's just the disconnection of trying to make Isabeau the, like, this mystery behind the mystery depth of, you know, why she feels so empty, and, you know, the whole parallel of her being as empty as the Doppelverm. That was the whole parallel of her being just as empty inside and lacking, you know, this love that.
Playing on that noir theme, too.
Yeah, of the detective being just as, you know, having the same problem that the villain has, but.
Do you want to go into thought-provokingness where it's talking about the theme of the story?
Yeah.
Did you rate this category? Would you give it out of 5 stars?
I did. I gave it a 2.
2? Flawed.
Flawed. The reason I don't go lower is I'm waffling between, is it mostly going for entertainment? And, or is it really trying to say something serious? Or is it just kind of like, it's just part of it? It's not something that should be focused on as much. That's the only reason it's not particularly lower.
I would have given this NA, not rated this category, if it wasn't for that threat at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And because of that, like, this doesn't mean I don't mean unreadable when I give the score. I gave a 1.25, as in very bad, very poor, just because there. When we're going to talk about that love and also that loneliness, the melancholy, that connection at the end, this theme we're talking about, which, okay, let's go into it then. I would have rated it NA almost. Would you have also rated it NA if it wasn't for that threat at the end?
Yeah.
Because again, I don't. It's not going for deep themes, so that doesn't mean that it's... This book is going for that more entertainment feel. So this is just more of a reflection of, hey, something was being said and really just was, I will not think about it again in the future. I think the, yeah, let me ask you the question though. So what about it didn't come, came across as flawed and didn't work right? What was the theme?
Ultimately, it was, you know, to be human is to love. And if you were lacking in love, then you lack the human connection, basically. And so, you know, loneliness, emptiness is what makes us human. Like, our connections is what makes us human. It's really it. Mm. And, you know, Isabeau is in many ways just as empty as the Doppelwurm, because she is isolated, does not really have any friends. Feels isolated, lonely, and very disconnected from humanity. How she lives is keeping people at a distance and all this stuff. So her supposing to identify, it's, to me, it just seemed very surface level of being told about this rather than seeing more direct results. It's combined being told that's what Isabeau is like, and then just seeing her being witty, personable, and able to connect with others during the story is what makes it going like, okay, why is she so, she says she's so lonely and doesn't have friends and all this disconnect, and doesn't seem like that would be the case.
Yeah, the theme's tacked on at the end where we get the explanation to Isabeau's background, which I can, this is like the last couple pages of the book or so, mm-hmm. where it is explained, want me to give off this quick paragraph?
Sure.
Okay. So Isabeau, oops. I just deleted it. Hold on. There we go. but Isabeau is talking with Evie, and they are going over, Isabeau kind of just, they have this friend-to-friend moment, and she reveals her past just kind of suddenly and says, Kabir Agarwal and Isabella Lindstorm. Those were my parents' names. I remember little of them, but I remember they loved each other very dearly. My mother gave me her blue eyes, my father his dark hair and skin. I have nothing else from them. They were brutally killed by a monster disguised as a human, disguised as a close, trusted friend, and I was left alone, small and alone. And that's the depth, that's the extent of depth we get about Isabeau's background. Now she's a huntress because she was left alone because of these monsters, and that's why she hunts. And that's also why she's alone. She was tricked and by what supposed to be a close friend, ended up being this Doppelwurm and being alone, like this lighthouse. And as the Doppelwurm at the end says, this is the in Blanchett's body, but it's the Doppelwurm, says, every word I've said to you today still stands true, said Blanchett. None of those words were false. You are one of us, as Ralph said. You are a lighthouse. You're lost and alone, just as I am. Melancholy is our only friend. And yes, Spindle Manor is a home, a place to stop running, for you, as I said, and for me, too. I've stopped running. This is a promise. Please stop running with me. And that's the whole, it's, hey, we're these lighthouses, we're small and alone, run away. That's the conflict here. And to be fair, the book's focus is entertainment, so we always talk themes in our reviews and discussions. It just was very tacked on and didn't have the depth to it. It came across as very telly as well. Obviously, yeah. It was, and that's part of it too, not contradictory, as you're saying, but just more so, as Isabeau is presented throughout the book, she's very competent, this straight shooter.
She's confident, she's witty, she's able to work. Like, she's not as alienated. She doesn't act like she's very alienated from other people. Her relationship with Evie is, you know, a little tit for tat, back and forth. She, you know, on the surface is going like, oh yeah, I don't like Evie, she's in the way, and trying to push her away, but it just seems more buddy cop. It doesn't seem
quippy,
serious.
Naturally.
Yeah, more quippy rather than actually. If she actually was pushing Evie away, like really tried, socially awkward, or attempts at a human connection and fails in some way, like something to make me believe that, like, oh, actually is isolated, and I would believe it. To me, I just don't. I don't believe she would be this isolated for this long. So that's at least how. And then just the melodramatic way of it, I don't feel is earned, of like, oh, you're a lighthouse alone. And it, you know, the Vern looks at the Huntress and the
villain moment.
It's not just the villain moment. It's literally every single character tells her to her face that you are like a lighthouse. You are alone, just like me. And like,
yeah. That's why it's attacked.
Do you go up to every, like, I just see it in your eyes that you're real alone. Who does that? Who sees that?
Me to you, but.
I guess, but you actually know me. These are strangers. Like, every time she meets someone, Isabel's just like.
You're alone and you're going to die alone and you're going to hate yourself.
Our only friend is melancholy. Jesus.
Yeah, wow, that's what a downer.
Hello to you too. How was your day?
My Tuesday was fine. Yeah, it's constantly.
It's every character has that insight into our main character.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to see that as the reader more than just the characters having to tell me how to feel about the main character. Yeah. And then you see that and it culminates at the end with this villain moment as well of going, ah, you're like me. And she goes, no, and then leaves with Penny into this future.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's just more so execution. The message of, hey, togetherness, it's a good message. Yeah, it's a positive thing. It's just more execution
of the
message. The
idea that, you know, what makes us human is our connection with others.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Like, good enough meshes. Nothing wrong with that. Just, yeah, would have rather shown rather than told that message.
And the love part, too, about the Doppelvorm not being able to mimic love, the reveal as well from Madame Blanchett being that she was willing to burn the Spindle Manor of, hey, Blanchett's one love was the Spindle Manor. So I thought that was a neat little way to solve the mystery. But the point and the message being that the Doppelvorm can't mimic love, if it was going for more thematic depth, that would have been something interesting to explore. Like, why is love this special human thing that the monster can't mimic? If it wanted to go that direction. But again, this was going more entertainment.
Sure.
Anything else?
To that specific point of it not being able to mimic love, mm-hmm. probably would have been nice to see that more in Isabeau as well. Like, what does she love? It definitely emphasized more on her lack of human connection and feeling alone. But the thing that the Doppelvorm can't mimic is love. And so does she have a love? Does she have a connection? So maybe that would be the better, like, the answer, the reason why she doesn't stay with the Vorm is because she does love something. She does love something more than just her isolation. Don't really see that at the end. I think that would have been a better way to tie them all together.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And what is it? Do you want to get into characters then?
Sure.
So, characters, what'd you give out of 5 stars?
Something I may want to move down a little bit, but I also gave it a 2.
Okay. I gave it 1.5 stars, which means bad on our scale.
Yeah.
2 is flawed.
Yeah, I know. So I think flawed, and again, it's the, is it a choice to go with overly archetypical characters? I didn't particularly hate any of these characters. None of them were annoying to the fact of, like, I just didn't want him on the page anymore. That's why
it was no Lila from Darker Shade.
Exactly. I didn't
Darker Shade of Magic. Or
yeah, I didn't hate him. Like, I wasn't going like, oh God, I wish I didn't have to read this character anymore. It was, so that's why I didn't go all the way to bad.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the best would be, like, oftentimes cringy. Could that be mostly the dialogue or is that the characters? I don't know.
Yeah, the thing that, talking about the protagonist first, because we have a large cast we can get to, but mm-hmm. Isabel first. Isabel Agarwal. The protagonist, Huntress, we talked about her backstory that's thrown in at the end about her parents, why she's a Huntress in the first place. It's that, but also the similar way that we're told she's kind of edgy, we're also told how, very clearly how competent she is as well. If she's asking the questions being, ah, but let's connect this and this. She's saying this to, she's kind of leading Evie or leading somebody else through her own thought process of that. That's how we're revealing how competent Isabel is. And also she'll throw out things that that I've seen in other books that can bother me too. Of she'll throw out something that is not super impressive, but the other character then goes, wow, that was really impressive. Now, for example, I have one case of this where it happened, but she was talking about how she says, hey, do you recall what Mr. Prescott's comments were? Do you recall what Mr. Prescott said? So that when she's going through this murder mystery, she says, more specific, he said, I don't just have my own secret. I know someone else's. And that's the best kind of secret to have, isn't it? Yes, someone else's secret. Someone who is sitting right here in this room. She calls that. And then, that's one good memory, said Colonel Thrall. And then somebody else, she goes on to say, she says, precision memory comes easy to me, dear Colonel, da 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 da. But it's a scene like that where,
but it's also,
why I don't like that. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
That was the thing to remember from the conversation. Yeah. It'd be more impressive of, you know.
You remember what you were saying when you ordered your coffee.
Exactly. The more mundane, the subtle differences of, you know, the colonel didn't actually pick up their own glass, or, you know, or the side comment of, oh no, Prescott said, you know, didn't say mine, but mine also. Like a one word difference of like this specificity.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, ah, oh, that's impressive. But like the full fact of him literally saying, I know someone's secret at this table.
I know someone's secret. It's like, I know. I should probably remember that.
Yeah, it was the thing that was highlighted.
What was more impressive is later with discovering Victor, I believe his name was, the astral projection dwarf that was in the suitcase, of saying, hey, for example, you never helped dig the body. I noticed you had other people dig. You never touched that, which means you're probably astral projected. Oh, that's observant. I see. That's where you could see. You don't have to tell us how compelling Isabel is when another character has to go, wow, that's a good memory, which maybe is also trying to set up the plot points of Isabel remembers all of these. But again, that doesn't even need to be there because we could see how Isabel connects everything. She's our huntress. She's able to remember things and point. Throwing that line in of trying to make us feel so impressive as Isabel is what falls flat, especially it's also the
Sherlock Holmes thing of, you know, Watson is there to basically say, wow, Holmes, that's a mighty fine deduction, Holmes. How'd you figure that out? It's like, yeah. It's
something like that.
It's a part of the genre.
Yes. And so that's what is about. Again, I didn't hate following Isabel's character, but it was more so what we were told about her, and the attempt at depth is what really got me as well. The attempt at showing she's not just this noir archetype. Her parents were killed, and that's why she feels small and alone. That's why she feels like the lighthouse. And it's that, if that even wasn't there, I wouldn't have disliked it as much. It's more so, oh, I was having fun without trying to add on a disguised depth to this noir-esque character. Phil, if it pushed more, leaned into the archetypes of, hey, Isabel, she's a huntress and she does huntress things. Ah, got it.
Yeah.
Not even supposed to think about the characters too much.
You could even keep the character's personality the exact same, mm-hmm. of just it's how she is. Or maybe it's how you think she is, but she's actually, you know, the budding friendship between her and Evie kind of grows, but the attempt at trying to make her loneliness like more of a serious plot just didn't land as much.
Mm-hmm.
But that's for Isabel.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying it right? Isabel or
Isabel? I believe
Isabel
or Bo? Yeah,
one of the two. I thought it was Bo, but whatever. What about the other? What about the? We can get to some of the others last. I think the more interesting one would be Margaret Blanchett, mm-hmm. Penny, and Evie, but. What about the rest of the guests of Spindle Manor? I'll be honest, all of them, I feel about the same. It's like, they were there, they served a plot point and a mystery each. And I just was not that invested in any of them.
They were one note and served their note.
Yeah. Was there any particular one that maybe stood out the most to you?
Stood out as a character, I felt the same about them as well. Yeah. I felt the same. When the plot thing happened with their character, I was going, oh, okay, what's the next mystery? So it was plot. The things happening to them was of more interest than who they were. They were there for the plot's purpose. So, for example, the Fields, we have the murderer. And we have the husband and wife, Teddy and Heloise. That even kind of leaned into the, you know, how the buddy cop between Evie and Isabel. Now we kind of have the typical sitcom Teddy, Heloise, and that kind of relationship that you see. You see you see Teddy and Heloise. They're... I don't have much to say on them other than they serve their plot role, and it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to add depth to it, but I can't really with their relationship. It was just that they are...
Their character archetypes are set up with... Basically, almost every one of them has something more subversive about them, or supposed to be subverting. So you have Abigail, Thrall, and Spud. And you set up of this more abusive relationship... And then,
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Wait a second.
Twist, the mystery, you find out they're actually in love. And this is, you know, he's just, you know, Spud's just really into kink shaming or something.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have...
what's the correct term? He likes being punished. BDSM, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Humiliation.
That's it.
Kink. Yep. Something. Then you have Helios Field and Theodore Field of, you know, this... standard couple, and you know, the competent one, then the incompetent one, just, but then actually the wife has a bitter edge to her. She's actually a murderer. All right. Yeah, it's the another little subversive thing. Then what? Prescott being maybe the twist for him is that he's exactly what everyone thought he was. Like, he's so obviously a bad guy. And you go, oh, well, there's going to be a twist. And it's like, oh, well, actually, he got murdered. He isn't the bad guy. And then you're realizing, oh, actually, he worked for the mob. He's not a great guy.
Hmm.
Maybe that's, I don't know. They just all felt like they set up a archetype to then be subverted in some way with the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they did.
Yes. What'd you think about all the characters being...
No, there is one character I think was supposed to be more of a connection. You're supposed to be more intrigued with her, and that is Angelica Keystone.
Because everybody had a thought about Keystone.
And everyone thought about her, her motivation.
She had a relation to everybody.
Her motivation also is the more intriguing of... Everyone had a standard-ish motivation, relatively, and Angelica just... You ask, fairly early on, you ask the question of why is she organizing this group of friends in this whole trip of people that clearly hate her, and she doesn't like them. She's incredibly cruel to them. Why would she do this? And then the kind of answer we get at the end is she just is a cruel person. She likes manipulating people, and forcing these people to together is her just having a fun time. I don't know. What are you supposed to feel with her character?
I think her purpose is everyone's supposed to have a motive against her. She's supposed to be that character that is sinister enough that it would make sense for anybody to kill her.
Yeah.
That's kind of her role, that everyone should have a gripe with her, and that's the role she fills. So the Fields make sense. Because cousins, potential money, rude to them, got it. Colonel Mulgrave, finds out about the Spud. Was that what they found? Did she find out about their relationship or something of the sort?
Also the political.
Yes, political stuff with them. Finds out that's why she was she knew Mr. Prescott, or how'd the line go of Mr. Prescott's newest secret that somebody, yeah, that Fields was going to kill.
Yeah.
That Fields was going to kill Keystone. And so because of that, that's why
he died.
Prescott died. And so it's everything's kind of in connection back to her.
Is it supposed to be more than that? Because I got the main thing is she's not just hateable. She's not just a, you know, plot point of everyone has a reason. Everyone has a motivation to kill her. But beyond that is the whole interview with Isabeau and Angelica Keystone feels odd. Of it seems like Keystone is supposed to have more depth. There's, you know, there's something more to her. And I just didn't get anything. I think I thought that I was supposed to get something more out of her. And I didn't.
Was that also, I think that cutoff of the interview was also to show how disagreeable she is too. She's like, I see why she could irk people.
Yeah. I also, the cutoff is, did Isabeau cut off the interview because she got under her skin? Or was it just, you're clearly not the verm.
Right.
You're clearly not the monster because you love manipulating people. And so I know you're innocent. You're fine.
How would that be innocent?
Because she's looking for the monster and she didn't. She didn't kill. Like, you clearly, out of everyone, I don't think the monster could mimic your love of manipulation and all this. Your love of cruelty and manipulation is evident. And so you're clearly not the monster. And that's why she's just like, out of everyone here, I know you're not the killer. And that's why she left. But I don't, that's maybe the character I think we're supposed to have the most amount of intrigue with.
Well, we have Blanchett too, the actual Doppelverm. Mm-hmm. The always kind of keeping the secret that the noble is downstairs, keeping a secret that apparently there's a spider in the walls, a malformed, keeping a secret that this is on a line where paranormal activity happens. Just all these things that you're going, all right, how many more secrets are up that sleeve of yours? And you're going, all right, what's the last secret? Is that they're the Doppelverm. And then Penny having to sit there and watch as she knows her friend Blanchett was killed by a Doppelverm the whole time. And Penny being like, hey, Abigail, look at the list. The list is important. And then us as readers going, that list is important. And then the one thing she disregards is going, I can't see it.
I don't have time to read this.
Next week, on next week's episode, we'll look. And of course, it's for how confident she is. Again, going back to her character, so confident, and then looking at this and not paying a little closer attention or going, let's look at that. So, it was a lot of filling the archetypes and being shallow in general. I think with the over 10 characters we have a lot of characters that are introduced quickly early on as well. Throws a lot at you. How did you kind of take getting all the character names and attaching you to characters early on? Was that a struggle to go, okay, this character's this character's that?
That's the one benefit of the writing being like... repeated the character names frequently enough. End of chapters at least twice happened where Isabeau like listed off all the character names of one of them is a monster, one of them is a killer. And so that was helpful. Like, good. I needed a good reminder of who all the characters were. So that was fine. I was able to keep it in my head well enough.
Yes. Otherwise, I don't have... There's Clayton Holmes. We didn't talk about Holmes very much.
Holmes. Let me look at it. Yeah. What about him?
We didn't talk about...
He's the drunk coachman.
Hector Fernard.
He was the footman. That was about it. Be fair, I mean, so is the Victor Mulgrave and just... All right, he was the dwarf. Like, okay.
That one made me laugh a little bit.
What?
In a good, not in even a bad way, of I'm just going, Okay, it's set up. It has a Chekhov's gun of they discussed astral projection. So it's in the realm of possibility. I got it. But so much world stuff is just thrown out. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead with this. But so much is thrown out when I'm like, okay, there's a dwarf in a suitcase astral projecting and there's monsters. And then let's dig up the... I'm just like, what's going on right now? I was... So many curveballs. Let's go on a plot.
Sure.
So I give plot a 2.5 star, which is disappointing, but it's higher than my other stuff. What would you give it?
A 2.25.
Gotcha. Yeah. So much was thrown out. I'm just going, okay, I'm just going to accept the randomness. Just, all right, what's happening? Because we had chapters here where, okay, I'm going to start with complaints.
Okay.
We had a chapter, end of chapter 22, Isabel goes to Reader and says, well, says to everybody in the crowd saying, hey, I'm going to unmask the villain. End of chapter 22. Then they do shenanigans in chapter 23. Da, da, da. You know what end of chapter 23 says? Okay, now I'm going to unmask the villain. I'm just going, all right, fine. I got my TikTok brains here. I was hooked. I'm ready to find out who the villain is. I was already there. And then it was ending each chapter.
It keeps going.
It keeps going. All right, now it's time to unmask the villain. And yeah, there were some plot things that, hey, I accepted the campiness of it. I accepted that that's just how this thriller murder mystery pace was going to be, and that's okay. Sure, we've got the astral projection. We've got, oh, by the way, your employer's here, end of chapter. By the way, the man in the walls, the half spider, a second murder, not just a first murder, not just a doppelgänger. Oh, my goodness. And that's where the maybe critique comes of, I think, possibly the author or just in the writing of this, possibly... For lack of a better word, like the insecurity that I would feel too as an author of, hey, man, is my reader hooked? Is my reader paying attention? Like, how do I get somebody to finish this book? And one sure way of doing that with a plot is having interesting things happen. So a good counterexample would be Lonesome Dove, right? And not fair to compare books like that, but in another book where very little you could say happens plot-wise of go, and I won't say the rest, but very little happens, but I'm going to talk about a sign for 10 pages.
Yeah.
All right. So it's kind of that maybe maturity that you see in the writing of, do you need to constantly throw things at the wall? And not to say that thriller is a lesser form of entertainment or anything. It's just more so it was even scaled up for the genre.
Moment that felt more evident was when the corpses became animated again.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, all right, we're already dealing with the ghost, and then now, and the murders, and now there's zombies too. And it's like, whoa, is this a part of the plot in the sense of somebody was raising the dead, and it's to try and, like, is the killer trying to throw him off the scent?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just additional. It's just part of it. Also, if Isabel knew that, like, the zombie was a distinct possibility, like, a probability. Why did they just tie a bell to the toe or something? Like, at that point, you chop off the head. Like, I would imagine you do proper zombie preparation procedures. Like, there's things to do.
There would have been some magic thing that would have been bad if you chopped off the head.
I guess, but I don't know. It was weird. It was added on there. That just, it felt really additional. It was like, okay, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot right now. Did this have a plot point? Not really? Okay.
There was even a point where it was acknowledged that the book was going slow. At the end of a chapter, Isabel says this. Actually, said Isabel, the night is droning a bit slow. Let's speed things up, shall we? She pulled her revolver and shot Dr. Mulgrave in the chest. Like, even at the end of the chapter, it's kind of acknowledge of, hey, this is kind of slowing down. Let's add something to this. I'm going to shoot Dr. Mulgrave, and that's when it was revealed, that the astral projection. Mm-hmm. But yes, that was certainly one big part of it. Now, disappointing more so for those reasons, but as far as the murder mysteries went, as far as the reveals went, it all was cohesive and made sense.
It's a very coherent plot. Yep. It all makes sense. There's no big question of, like, that doesn't make sense, or, that's too big of a leap of logic.
It was thought through.
Yeah, it was thought through. The reveal that it is Mulgrave as the actual monster, and it be like that.
Blanchett,
thank you. And that Isabeau actually tricked the noble by fixing the the compass and so made the lie. Like, okay, cool. That all made sense to me. That was all set up. It's all fine. But just because it makes sense does, and that's all the positives. It was a coherent plot, and the moment to moment was engaging and hooked you in. Mm-hmm. Going like, oh, well, what's going to happen next? So it worked.
Yeah.
But beyond that, if we're that positive about it, what is the drawback? Why did you find it?
Oh, what we started with of that. But I guess what drawback was the pacing, and more so the throwing so many things at the wall and keeping the attention also creates the effect of, if it all feels like that, then what thing is the most important? Or maybe that's not a good way to put it. It's just there was no wow moment. There was no discovery. There was no, even the finding out the murder mystery at the end, I would say makes sense and it's cohesive. Ah, got it. There's not that euphoria of, oh my goodness, I'm all putting this together. This makes so much sense. There's not that catharsis you get from a typical murder mystery. What I would want from a murder mystery. This one, I think part of the journey in following the murder mystery as well, there was each character having their secret to unfold, and then there being the other three secrets, big secrets, turns into two, because the two murders were actually just one murderer. All of that going on, I was kind of being thrown a lot of flashing lights, and not even necessarily, at a certain point, the Doppelwurm kind of just fell to the background. It was more, okay, who's the murderer?
Yeah, you start thinking,
what do you focus on, you know?
Well, the hunt is about going, knowing that everyone is going to die unless she figures out the monster thing, and also partly thinking, why does she care so much about the murderer at this point? Mm-hmm. To some degree, I wonder if it would fit more with her character if she was more cold and dismissive of the actual murders. And going like, yeah, that the murder is not my job. Like, I don't care. This is not, like, you got the, you know, the real people can deal with that later. The police can have that. I'm trying to find out the monster. And that should be the focus, and it doesn't seem that she focuses on it very well. She tells the noble, like, I think they're linked, and if I find the murderer, the monster will reveal themselves and somehow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel as right. It doesn't seem like the right thing.
Why is that?
It just, I don't believe that as well.
Mm.
That's, oh yeah, if I solve the murderer, then it'll unveil the monster. I would think she would focus more on the monster.
Mm.
Though maybe it's a tactic, because it's the one card up her sleeve in figuring out who the monster is love. And so she's needs to find out what people love without actually just outright asking it. Because
mm-hmm.
then you the monster knows.
Investigation.
So mm-hmm. I guess.
Also, here's a plot point too, very early on. What did you think about the early reveal and Isabel sitting everyone down and saying, here's why I'm here. Here's the deal. I'm a huntress. One of you is a Doppelwurm. And they can mimic everything except love. I'm here to figure it out. What do you think about that tactic in the plot of just laying all the cards out, cutting to the chase, and getting right into it and letting everybody know what her intentions were?
I don't think that's not a wrong decision to do, but it certainly does. It's a shock that cuts some of the tension out. Like, that mystery and that thing being withheld from people is a source of tension. And so when Isabel actually just reveals it, it eliminates some of the tension. Because in the very beginning, she's going undercover. She has to hide who she is. And so she has this mysterious mystique around her. And then we, the audience, get to feel like we're in on the secret. And then she just lays it out on the table. We're no longer in on the secret. So how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I didn't, tactic wise, was it smart to reveal everything? And maybe she needed people to stay here, be like, hey, this is an ongoing investigation. I have to let you know I'm here so that nobody I'm watching, that kind of thing.
But also, no one could leave anyway.
Yeah.
And also, it was raining and the fog, the mystical magic fog would actually kill them.
And do you want to reveal all of that? Of here's every little detail of Doppelvorm can't mimic that. Like, why would you mention that part of what the Doppelvorm can't mimic? Maybe wants them to also look out for it.
She didn't tell people that.
Oh, so that's Evie, right? Or
yes.
Was that a conversation to Evie? Yes, it was, because yes. I think she said to everybody, they can mimic everything, then said to Evie, except love. And that's what we need to look out for. That's what it was.
That's what she kept that close to the chest.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to withhold that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, at first, so what I... at first, did you think or connect anything when the first murder happened? Did you have any thought of if that was connected to the Doppelvorm at all? Or was it just conveniently a separate plot point to you? Was that immediately noticeable, or what did you think when there was a murder? How it was connected at all?
I mean, the best way I, at the very beginning, thought that it was either completely disconnected, which is where I was leaning, but the only reason I could think that the Doppelvorm did it, like if the Doppelvorm is the actual murderer, that it's a distraction somehow.
Hmm.
But I didn't see much of a reason for that to be like. The Doppelvorm has no reason to kill someone right then in front of the Huntress. It only makes it worse.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to go the direction. Now, what happens when the Doppelvorm dies? It like becomes the creature, right? You get this. I didn't know exactly until the end of the book. I didn't know if it was going the direction, which maybe I would have preferred, of the Doppelvorm was in Mr. Prescott and then maybe is about to... starts to get, oh, I think this person's a Doppelvorm. I just need one more thing to complete the theory. And the Doppelvorm takes another body the next night, like one by one, goes from Mr. Prescott, then takes over the fields and this. And she's kind of trapped in there with having to contain the Doppelvorm from taking out everybody. But it went a different direction. I didn't know if that was the case of Doppelvorm was Mr. Prescott, then moves on to the next person. Then it's, but you know, Isabelle's kind of in this cat and mouse chase of going, oh, I think it's talking to Evie. I think it's this person. I got it. Here's a murder or something. Like something happens and going, it was, but I didn't get, I don't know. It kind of like, and then, oh my goodness, how many are going to die before you figure it out? That kind of heartbeat pace. But
and then the people blaming her of like, hey, you're
find this out.
Find this out. Like, we're all going to die if you don't like
being more haunting. And I
like your idea more.
Thanks. But I thought that would have been, because instead of it being a convenient murder mystery plot on the side, it could have contained with that and been, that could have been the tension. You don't need the noble woman to be there and all that kind of stuff. But the direction this did go was, yeah. Still, the plot was engaging. It's the thing that if I was to recommend it to somebody, I would go like, hey, plot's fast paced and will entertain you. And that's what this book will do. So if anything sticks out, it's that, I guess.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. Anything else for plot?
No, that's about it.
Okay. World building. What'd you give out of 5 stars?
This was my highest score of a 3.
Fair. Okay. I could be convinced. I gave it 1.75, very flawed.
Ah, yeah. Now, the reason why is just some of the little description and details just made me more curious. It doesn't go into too much detail, but, you know, the robot arms and the magic and how it's psychic linked, and that kind of ties into the astral projection and then the fault light. It was just a lot. But the vibes worked with me, and just this other continent that is full of monsters, but no fog, and it's, you know, you could see the stars. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I don't know. I was neutral. I didn't hate really any of the details.
I hated one detail. You know the detail. The thunder. I'm going to complain about it in world and in prose. I have a personal beef with the amount of thunder and lightning descriptions. Give me something else. I get it. It's raining. It's thundering. I understand.
Yeah, lightning.
A lot. And so mine was more with the setting of, like, I get it. God. And then also the throwing. Okay, we got the Doppelvorm, the live doll girl with Penny. Astral projection. Esmeralda, she's the medium bringing back the dead. The nobles, the malformed with Ralph, which in that whole plot point segment was Ralph was in the attic and actually heard about heard the footsteps that Mr. Prescott was taking, so helped with the murder mystery solving.
But ultimately, Ralph was probably the most extraneous plot point to add in.
Yeah.
I think the mystery ghost was more important than half spider person in the walls.
Yeah.
It was weird. It's like I did find the thing I found funny is when our detective goes, Blanchett, you hiding anything else from us? A giant spider in the walls. Didn't think that was relevant to bring up in the murders.
Not at all.
Not. It wasn't relevant. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
At that point, you just go, okay, Blanchett, you're under heavy suspicion now. You don't get to leave my sight. No, yeah, just. That was wild.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice.
And the nobles can just do a whole bunch of stuff. They're like 12 feet tall and.
Yeah, that was all. That was something.
Yeah. But you were more neutral. You liked the vibes.
The vibes were there.
Okay.
The fog, the lightning. The light.
Give me fog and I'm here. Just give me a mist.
I do like. Okay. I do like the old London fog aesthetic. It's great. The smog.
Yeah. I would have liked the world to feel. To get me more lost into the world, a bit more.
Less,
a bit more connection, a bit more focus rather than deeper, not wider. Kind of sure. that general complaint. Not that every world has to do that, but this one would have probably done a little bit better for me if it was a little deeper. Again, it's a shorter book too. So, yeah, a lot of stuff thrown out there and the vibes. I just want to start my lightning rant. We want to go to pros.
Sure.
Pros out of 5 stars, would you give it?
I initially have it as out of 2, but going down to a 1.75.
Okay. Very flawed for you. I'm at a 1.5 for bad. And this was, if anything, brought the book down in total. Remember when we were discussing which category is the most important when it comes to a book? We had that that review. This one, I will say, if the prose was different, the other categories probably elevated a little bit more, like the characterization a little bit, the world. This is where I think it dragged some stuff down. Why very flawed for you? What was the big sticking point?
It's just the dialogue was wearing everything on their sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Every piece of dialogue was so on the nose. Every individual was hyper aware of not only their own neuroses, but also everyone else's, apparently. Mm. Just everyone seemed like a psychologist. The fact that our deep, brooding, melancholy protagonist is basically seen through by everyone, the villain. It's just on the nose, everything. Descriptions being a bit more repetitive, simplistic, all that stuff.
Yeah. First thing, the descriptions of things, of some of the awkward descriptions. I want to see if you agree with some of these. Here's an example of one. Isabel here is explaining to the fields why Teddy could be the beast. This is this line. She says, "There would be no way for you to tell if the man you sleep next to is Teddy or a beast of unimaginable horror." Right, like something like that. And then here's another quick example, which I'll show you what the parallel is. "A strange curiosity took over Isabel. It was like the urge one gets to peek inside a book when it told it contains untold horrors that must never be read. What was one to do but give it a good skim?" Now, just the combination with some stuff like that of the descriptions of being unimaginable horrors, untold horrors, strange curiosity, like the vague description of the feeling you're supposed to get rather than something more attuned to the character or something that is more precise and less vague. So is it a beast or an unimaginable horror? When you hear unimaginable, untold, and indescribable, like these kind of things, we'll describe it, instead of the untold, the strange. And a little bit more awkwardness was, here's a line, was when Miss Keystone says, Mrs. Keystone says she sleeps with women as well as men. The description, what Isabel responds saying is, "I would sooner dive headfirst and blindfolded into a pit of angry vipers," right? Like, nothing's wrong with this kind of stuff, but it's more so like the awkward analogies and awkward descriptions, which maybe has to do with tying it to the character of it, just feeling like a strange analogy to use. It feels it feels I can hear the author.
Yeah.
Of like the analogy of it was like the urge to peek. One gets to peek inside a book when it contains untold horrors that must never be read. What was one to do but give it a good skim? Like an analogy like this or an analogy like that. Some of the, it just felt awkward to me. Do you agree with some of that awkwardness at all? Or am I just pulling out straw lines here?
No, did seem to be a commonality. It is a lack of specificity in both descriptions, in character details. The reason why things seem so archetypical is they lacked any odd details or depth. Like, they can all be summed up in, you know, a word or a phrase, or rather than any kind of unique characters. But even then, descriptions, everything is just something you've seen before, and rather than it being unique. And so the analogies as well, all the references, unimaginable horror, or yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah. I'll do my quick list here of the lightning and thunder. At a certain point, a quarter or halfway through the book, I just started noting every time there was lightning, be like, hey, is this just in my head, the amount of lightning descriptions there are, or is this real? Is this actually happening? Lightning flashed behind her, casting her shadow onto them. This is now a scene where Mr. Holmes was like, oh, murder mystery, okay. He whipped about and pointed, and thunder and lightning dramatically lit him up. Talk about Mr. Holmes. There was a tense moment later in the book. Isabel pulled the hammer back on her revolver. Even the thunder seemed to go silent, waiting for the standoff to play out. Okay. Interrogations are happening. This is the Miss Valdez scene. The storm fell steadily outside, the rain coming heavy, the thunder rolling long and slow in the distance. Okay. Then there's the interrogation with Blanchett. Blanchett's talking about how melancholy is our only friend. Thunder rattled the window, and Isabel cleared her throat. Then the introduction to chapter 10, it's talking about wings flared outward at the high edges and contorted faces reached from below, with clawed hands grappling upward. When lightning flashed behind, it flickered from the door's crevices, making the scene come alive. Okay. Then chapter 12 intro, Isabel stood at the end of the third floor hallway, lightning flashing down its length. Then pages later after that, rain fell steadily, thunder cracked in the distance, the flashes of lightning casting deep shadows across Miss Valdez. Shadows, shadows, do you notice shadows yet? Okay, end of chapters now. We have, after the finding the body, one of the last paragraphs, Isabel was saying this, dig her up! Lightning cracked nearby, echoing in the rain. We bring her to room 303. In case you didn't know, the lightning's kind of emphasizing the series and tension of the moment, right? And then going to the malformed with Ralph. By the way, seeing Ralph in the attic, of course there has to be thunder, right? So thunder crashed outside and people turned about, pacing and rubbing their heads. Back up the stairs they went, one big clump of frantic humanity goaded by the flashing lightning and cracking thunder. Okay, and then very next chapter when they meet Ralph in the attic, of course in the attic, lightning flickered outside, creating a single beam of white light flashing over and over through the room. And then later in the book, lightning flashed from the window at the end of the hall as they jogged to room 204. And then I have the greatest chapter ever written in literature. And I mean that. I like the smile on my face when hearing this. Chapter 25. The building shook with violent pounding vibrations. It wasn't lightning. The storm outside had passed. Yes. I was like, yeah, we're going to get sunshine or whatever. But it was the end of the book. And I was, anyways, there was lightning and thunder.
I'll be honest. You were bothered by the lightning a lot more than I am.
I thought it'd be a fun bit.
It was. I didn't notice. At all.
I did when I was going, how much lightning and thunder? Damn.
I mean, just kind of got the vibe of like, it's a lot of lightning and thunder. It's a big storm. It's going to be referenced a lot. It's part of the vibe. They're in the middle of a storm.
You had no issues with it? Okay.
No.
My main issues were more so the descriptions, like the shadows and the constant similar descriptions of, is that your cat outside? Or is that a doppelverm that's trying to attack us? Yeah.
I think so.
Your cat wants in. Okay. But yeah, it was more so the repetition of descriptions. The atmosphere is always the same. Anytime a character needed to be emphasized,
It's so loud.
Is that being picked up on the mic?
I think it's picking up on the mic too.
Oh, poor Fig.
Okay. My God.
But yeah, any more thoughts about the pros for you?
No, I got distracted by my cat.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it's the lightning didn't bother me. It was just the general vague descriptions and the on the nose dialogue and the simplistic. It's the simplistic description and dialogue that kind of got me.
Okay. Yeah. That is a lot of it. It's the visualization. So when I bring up the thunder and stuff like that, it's the similar visualization, or it's the not precise language. And probably the biggest gripe I had was more the unnatural dialogue. The conversation between characters, whether it was telling us what to think about the character, but it was felt very much, not that it has to be realistic dialogue, doesn't have to have this kind of naturalistic, not Tarantino, what's the other director's name that does like Tangerine and Anora? Oh my God, that's going to bother me. Hold on. That's really going to bother me. Sean Baker, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like Sean Baker films, but it's more so, I guess, what does unnatural mean to you when you're talking about dialogue? Because do you agree with that?
Unnatural for the character. Could argue that this book has, because the characters are so over the top in stereotypical archetypes, that the dialogue itself is going to be stereotypical archetypes on the nose. Like, they do kind of fit the characters in a way. It's just not as entertaining. I would rather the characters kind of talk uniquely. But it seems to be like the dialogue blends between characters. I didn't really see the characters having a particularly unique character voice.
And it wasn't fun reveals. It was more so as the dialogue was brought forth, it was Isabel leading along the other characters to reveal the murder mystery to the reader as well. So her guiding Evie, her guiding others to be like, yes, if that's the case, then what next? Kind of asking the character to give the information. So the information wasn't given in more interesting ways as well. That's part of it. And here I have another description example of maybe some of the issue with the more, geez, Vic, oh, your cat's going at it.
Yeah.
Another description of when it came to some of the action moments. Here's one. Isabel fanned her revolver, emptying all six chambers in only a couple seconds. Her index finger kept firm on the trigger, left hand sending the hammer flying over and over, bullets thudding directly into Mr. Prescott's torso. So that's a case where when it did get precise and when it did get detailed, it mentioned, it basically told and showed instead of just doing one. Like, for example, here it was emptying all six chambers in only a couple seconds, like telling you what it does. And then it describes her index finger kept on the trigger, left hand sending the hammer flying over and over, bullets thudding directly. It says the same thing in multiple different ways. Even when it was precise language, it told with the empty the chambers, then it got precise about the index finger, and then it said kept firm on trigger, left hand sent the hammer flying over and over, bullets thudded into it. It's describing the same thing with too much. Yeah. So there was some of that as well. When it did get precise, it was descriptions that made me scratch my head more than getting totally involved in it. I think this is one of the things too, where, but hey, it could be being too critical. It's SPFBO winner and all of that. But this one, I think, could have used another editor or check. I don't know if it was professionally edited, but maybe I don't think it would have been professionally edited, which it could make sense as an indie book as well, like not having the resources to do so. What would you have said? Do you think this had a professional edit, or did it read as though it was professionally edited but just wasn't to your liking?
I think it read as the dialogue itself read more of a self-published book. In general, I do think self-published novels, the indicator, if I can tell a difference between traditionally published and self-published, it is in character dialogue.
Yeah.
That is the factor. I think a lot of indie authors can get very good descriptions, just the same as a traditionally published author. there's something with natural sounding dialogue that traditional publishers know how to work with an author on.
I will say though, so this is our fourth in the SBFBO. This is the first one where I've had an issue with the prose.
Sure.
Especially by Blood by Salt.
Oh, God.
Fantastic prose. Orconomics, Sword of Kagan. By the way, for the author here, like no hate at all. This is just more so, again, our subjective view on a book that's already won the award. Or this is the concept of champions. So
yeah.
We are no champions. We're here to just put our glasses up and say, throw our thoughts into the void. I'm curious because this does have a sequel. I'm not sure if it's a trilogy or not, but it does continue on. And I imagine the story continues with Isabel and Penny now that they are going off into the future together.
Well, also Evie. Evie's the partner. Yes,
and Evie.
Yeah.
Good old Evie.
I imagine Penny's going to be like the at-home butler. She serves that role. I imagine.
Yes, yes. I would be curious to see improvement as well. Not that I have to be the one to be impressed, just to see if there was any difference from book one to book two. I think this was the debut novel. I don't have that fact checked, though, so I'll have to double check on that.
Fair enough.
Any other thoughts on Murder at Spindle Manor? Why can I say that well? Murder at Spindle Manor.
No, that's about it. Fourth book. Four books down. How many more to go?
Six more to go.
I gotta pick up the pace.
We do. Is anything going to top Sword of Kagan? We'll see.
I'll be honest, the more I think about it, By Blood by Salt's come real fucking close.
Really?
I love that book.
Oh, it's a great book. Yeah.
It's just been sitting in the back of my head just want more.
Yeah.
I bought the second book as soon as I finished. I really want to fit it into my TBR soon.
Yes. I will be too, because I'd love to chat with the author too, like be caught up with their books and have a chat. That'd be great.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Thank you all for watching this review. We will see you next episode.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.